You're listening to an event from the U.S. Institute of Peace, part of the USIP podcast network. For more information about our work around the world, visit usip.org and check us out on social media.
Secretary General, Excellencies, distinguished guests. My name is Keith Mines. I'm Vice President for Latin America and the Caribbean at the U.S. Institute of Peace. And on behalf of the Acting President of USIP, George Moose, I'd like to offer a very warm welcome to all of you to this very timely and important discussion on strengthening democracy in the Americas. USIP was founded by Congress in 1984 as a living institution embodying the heritage, ideals, and concerns of the American people for peace. We're an independent, nonpartisan, and we use a mix of convenings, analysis, and field programs to help mitigate and prevent violent conflicts abroad and to help build the tools that help nations to remain at peace after conflict. In the hemisphere, we're active in Colombia, Venezuela, Central America, Bolivia, and Haiti, and we're very pleased to partner with the Carter Center and the Organization of American States Inter-American Democratic Charter Voluntary Group for this event and recognize the presence of our very close friend, Secretary General Almagro. We thank Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs Victor Verdun of Paraguay for his participation virtually today, and we recognize the presence of Jenny Lincoln, Senior Advisor for Latin America and the Caribbean at the Carter Center, Carlos Ayala, Professor and Chair of Constitutional Law at the Andres Bello Catholic University and former President of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, Eduardo Stein, former Vice President of Guatemala, Thomas Garrett, Secretary General of the Community of Democracies, and Catalina Botero, Director of the UNESCO Chair on Freedom of Expression at the Universidad de los Andes, and Co-Chair of the Oversight Board of Facebook and Instagram. So USIP has a special interest in the connection between democracy and peace. Central to the ideals of the United States is the conviction that democratic governance is the most effective means of avoiding conflict. It's an ideal embodied by the Inter-American Democratic Charter, a key tool for strengthening and protecting democracy through shared values and mutual support. The OAS has long championed these values throughout the hemisphere, most recently with the formation of the Voluntary Group of Member States for follow-up to the Charter. We look forward to today's critical conversation about how we can all work to strengthen and support the IADC and its role in sustaining democracy throughout the Americas. And we look forward to the OAS's 54th regular session of the General Assembly to be hosted next month by Paraguay, which will build on today's important discussion. So we turn now to Ambassador Verdun for his framing remarks for today's conversation.
Para todos. Agradezco la invitación para participar de este simposio, así como al grupo voluntario de seguimiento a la Carta Democrática Interamericana por promover esta iniciativa. A más de dos décadas de su adopción, la Carta Democrática.
And apart from doing this, the Democratic Charter continues to be an important fact for us, not just because it acknowledges democracy, but it forces or obligates countries to promote them and defend them. Now, today's situation is very different from when the CART was approved. The challenges have become even more complex with emerging risks that have an impact on security and stability of our societies. International organized crime, climate change, or pandemics are challenges that are added to the historical ones, such as poverty, inequality, and others. So within this context of great changes and challenges, we have to adapt to all the needs and the demands of the citizenry and the majorities so that we can preserve the confidence in the political system and democratic institutions. So it is here where the Charter can play a role, because it commits the countries to make that representative democracy a reality and to protect those citizens, as we mentioned. It also has as an essential element the respect of human rights and basic rights, rule of law, and the celebration of very fair, free, and transparent elections. So our democratic charter has not lost any relevance. We know that there great efforts should continue to be made so that it continues to be implemented, and especially when there are dangers to the democratic order and other institutions. Distinguished representatives, friends, ladies and gentlemen, we are a few weeks from the next General Assembly of the OAS. For Paraguay, it is an honor to host this session of meetings that will happen from the 26th and 28th of June in Asunción. This will be the third time that my country will host this encounter. The first time was in 1990, when we had just recovered democracy, and the last one was exactly 10 years ago in 2014. We have selected the motto for this General Assembly: integration, security for the sustainable development of the region. Security is indispensable for peace and development. We are sure that with the joint effort of these states, we can give a better answer to whatever is menacing peace in the progress of the in development of these countries. We want all citizens to feel protected and the private sector find a favorable environment to create more and better jobs. So our idea of integration is collaboration, joint efforts and solidarity between all the members of the organization to reach these common objectives or goals. So Paraguay is convinced that it is needed to renew this regional commitment for a safe and more secure future for everybody. So all these efforts that are concerted and sustained at a hemispherical level can allow us to meet the goals and establish the necessary conditions to have sustainable development for the region. I thank all of you for your attention, and we're looking forward to greeting you in Asunción. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Jenny Lincoln, the Senior Advisor for Latin America and the Caribbean at the Carter Center. It's a privilege and an honor to be here today with you in representation of the Carter Center and the Friends of the Inter-American Democratic Charter. The Friends of the Charter is a group that was formed in 2004 by former US President Jimmy Carter, demonstrating his commitment to stay on the ball as a former president, supporting democracy not only in our hemisphere, but in our world. The Friends of the Charter is a group of former presidents, prime ministers, cabinet ministers, human rights defenders, who joined him in this commitment. This group seeks to support the work of the OAS in this important effort to strengthen democracy and human rights in our hemisphere. It's a voluntary group of individuals willing to commit their time and energy to ensure the protection of universal human rights and the commitment to insist on the obligations of governments who are democratically elected to defend and promote democracy in our hemisphere. Thank you to USIP for hosting this event and for collaborating with the Organization of American States and inviting the Carter Center to join in this effort. This meeting today and subsequent work of the voluntary group shows the commitment that President Carter looked for in 2004. I will share with you that he may be celebrating his 100th birthday on October 1st. His health is failing, but he is still with us and very much aware of what is going on as democracy is backsliding in the hemisphere and needs our help. Everyone in this room, everyone in the OAS, and everyone who cares about strengthening democracy in the hemisphere has a moral obligation to join the effort, this voluntary effort that the OAS has initiated. Thank you, Secretary General Almagro. Thank you, Keith Mines, USIP. And thank you also in representation of the Carter Center for your commitment for being here and carrying this message forward.
Buenas tardes a todos y a todas.
Good afternoon, everyone. I was asked to say a few words about all the subjects that are linked to human rights and the Democratic Charter, just some ideas to begin to reflect and make progress. So these are two concepts that are interrelated. We could say that the Charter, if we begin with the Charter, democracy, it is a right of people, but that right creates an obligation for the states to promote democracy and defend it. So from the first article of the Charter, the link between democracy and human rights has been established and also tied to the concept of democracy as a right. So this interrelation or interdependency leads us to concepts such as the ones that were developed by the Inter-American Court for Human Rights. And there are some concepts that are inseparable: democracy, human rights, and rule of law. There is undoubtedly a relationship to add to more democracy, more protection of human rights. And when there is less democracy, there is less protection of human rights. Within these essential elements of democracy, the Charter identifies one of these as human rights, as one of the fundamental components, basic components: freedom of expression and freedom of the press, but also other things that may seem abstract or institutional, such as the independence of political powers or government powers. And this may sometimes make people lose some respect for the rule of law. But there is a relationship that is inseparable from promoting democracy and human rights. They are inseparable. Article 7 of the Charter makes it undoubtable that democracy is indispensable to exercise human rights. We cannot think of a hemisphere where human rights are respected if the hemisphere is not making progress, correcting, and everything that refers to democracy. So bad news, the ones that deteriorate democracy and the rule of law, that deterioration then leads to the deterioration of respecting human rights. So the defense of democracy and the protection of human rights stopped being in the Americas a domestic problem protected by the medieval principle that still sort of exists, but of no intervention on domestic internal issues. Human rights and democracy stop being a sovereign concept as it was with kings. That means that not only is it the obligation of the member states of the OAS, as we see within the Charter and the OAS Charter, there is a collective obligation. There is a collective obligation to protect, as jurisprudence of the Inter-American Court has decided, to protect collectively that democracy and also human rights. And all interventions that third states make when they intervene on democracy or human rights in a specific or country are a legitimate intervention in order to protect this collectivity. It is why it is important for the political bodies of the organization have to know and collectively assess situations affecting human rights, rule of law, and democracy in all states. And not to get into too much detail, we have seen reports from the Secretary General that warn us about this. But when there is one body such as the Inter-American Court on Human Rights, which rules over all member states, and they produce reports about the situation of human rights in different countries, and they also emit communiques and cases that are structural situations which are alerting us on the deterioration of democracy. There are two things that I think are extremely important and should be paid attention to because of what can mean further deterioration of democracy in any of the countries of the member states. But within the hemispheric experience, and I will even say world experience, these are things to learn from these early alerts. The attacks against freedom of expression, it's bad news when governments attack journalists, media, and when they eradicate the freedom of expression. The second one is the attack against judicial independence. Once freedom of expression and justice are controlled, it's too late. It is too late. That is a system that stopped being democratic. So that experience, that hemispheric experience, and we can think of specific countries where this has happened, and we can also see countries where there are these early warnings. So those reports that gave us early warning in the case such as Venezuela or Nicaragua, but they were not paid attention to in 2005, 2010, within these political bodies, they were not. And the systematic compliance was let go or left aside. And so that early warning of judicial independence was let go of or not given enough importance. This should lead to a collective commitment where all member states, and of course civil society in the Americas, should be all committed to provide a response in good faith of taking measures that can be supported by the organization, but also it leads to a collective assessment, as the Charter invites us to do, by way of the political bodies. They can ask for reports, they can heed these early warnings, because we are in a hemisphere where we can see that it's not the traditional coup d'etat that is happening, but it is a slow deterioration of democracy, and that's why we have to pay attention to these early warnings of protection that are in the Inter-American Democratic Charter. I leave it up to here. Thank you very much to all. Secretary General, dear Keith, friends, it is said that the Latin American subcontinent is facing some difficulty in its democratic vocations. What we hear on the street in the last few years in my work in many countries, several countries, especially the Andean region, is that it's a bit more complicated than that. And those challenges that the subcontinent is facing have been expressed or stated in a sort of informational foam in the news, international news, that also take into account the electoral process that the United States of America is living through right now. So it is within this point of view or perspective of political risks where the participation spaces for different citizen groups are perhaps maimed, or we can see that there are generalized ideas of discontent within many sectors of the populations in many of the countries, where it is the youth above all, and we've already seen this in three of what we of the surveys we have done for Latino Barometro. The young people want to participate in politics, but the traditional parties do not allow them to, because we have evolved towards a situation where many of the parties already have owners, so to speak. And therefore, the public effort where the Latin American region is living through, we are sharing formidable challenges with the rest of the planet in a very complicated world context, where I would like, and perhaps it is because of my profession, I'd like to concentrate on some themes and areas that have to do with communications. That environment of a world complicated situation with tense contradictions that are questioning the future of humanity, we could say, from very deep psychosocial divisions and crises of public health that as we have just lived through, and educational systems, but also dangerous deterioration of our environment, accelerated technology transformation and changes, complex divisions and conflicts, multiple risks to security and safety, and it a frontal questioning of the quality of political systems, how pertinent they are, and how able they are to solve the problems that the populations face. So at the same time, within all of the hemisphere, including the United States, as I mentioned, democracy and the rule of law are being attacked and at risk. So this disarticulated and challenged world environment, we add problems that have not been solved in our region that we have been carrying for decades, sometimes for 500 years. And what continues to arise, and recently many population groups in different parts that are seriously questioning the validity, the use, the pertinence, and the efficacy, and the honorability of democratic systems that we have known so far. All of this is being reflected in more complex ways by electoral processes that not only question the political system that we have known as democracy, as representative democracies, in quotes, but are also rejecting the traditional politicians, the traditional parties, and associating them directly with a person or with corrupt practices. And they are associated sometimes with international, transnational organized crime, which as now is more intensely the case of the Central American corridor from the Darién passage and in from Colombia to Panama to the border of the U.S. and Mexico.
The problem here is that in many populations, people are fully convinced that most politicians and their corresponding organizations are associated to drug cartels or are involved in corruption schemes, such as we saw in the latest report of the Latino Barometer. This includes perceptions on behaviors, obscure behaviors of public institutionality, which tells citizens that most public decision centers in every single power of the state are fatally infected by the organized crime mafias. I apologize for taking too long in the diagnostic section of my presentation, but these sets of daily experiences that many of the population sectors in our hemisphere are actually asking themselves about. They ask themselves if these systems are truly the ones that are in charge of protecting and in any event to promote democratic development horizons for everyone. Most of the population in many countries are aware of the fact that we are unequal and excluding societies. And therefore, the fundamental question as to how to bring a new dynamic energy to development by providing basic elemental services such as decent work opportunities and so on, which in some way could give opportunities to these sectors of the population that do not find a way, means of making a living in their own countries, and which leads them to flee en masse to search for that American dream that was promoted in the 50s. And since we're going back to the 50s, currently, in terms of communications, there is some sort of resurrection of the arguments of the Cold War, where we see that the efforts of a functional democracy are being qualified so that indeed it can produce umbrellas of opportunity for the least favored sectors of society with possibilities for development, as well as providing new instruments for social control. I apologize for this quote. I'm not sure of the specific words he used, but Daniel Ortega just mentioned during a speech 3 or 4 days ago that democracy is the new social political control system to subjugate populations and truly deny their rights. And look whose mouth it came from. So, for us, this is a call for looking for concrete solutions that truly are able to dig deep with their roots on the basis of processes, legislative processes that are being developed currently. Because legislation, in the opinion of many in populations, is at the service of special interests and not at the service of the population at large. Therefore, one of the efforts that genuinely democratic governments must promote is precisely to ensure that legislative frameworks can be there, as Mr. Ayala just said, to protect the human rights of people. And in this way, having control of jurisdictional centers or bodies which are in charge of interpreting and enforcing the law should be first order political goals. And going back to Ortega, I apologize for that. It turns out that he was unable to digest the fact that he was overcome in his efforts to go to be elected president. He was defeated by Violeta Chamorro. And the Sandinista forces leaders told him, well, you should create a process to teach the main intelligence officers of the Sandinista army to train them to be lawyers. They studied law so that they could permeate the justice system so that they could control the Supreme Court of Justice through their proxies. This is what we have been seeing in Venezuela, and we see this occurring in other countries. And I am going to quote, I'm going to cite my own country, and I'm not, I don't want to be critical of others. The OAS is being criticized because there are many people who are uninterested in keeping hidden that there are systems of citizen control that do not respond to democratic systems. And that was a crucial element in my election, in the election process in my country, where it was guaranteed that the votes were unquestionably in favor of Bernardo Arevalo, where the forces were trying to prevent him to taking power in his own country for which he was democratically elected. Allow me to give you three elements that I deem to be absolutely vital at this time, especially considering the new development avenues for people, for persons, families, communities, regions. I don't wish to offend anyone with this, but we do have a social historical debt that dates back to colonial times in many countries and is still not solved. And that's the universe of inequality and exclusion. In fact, in many countries, they seem to be facing a the fact that they're losing control of public force, and this is extremely dangerous vis-a-vis organized crime on the one hand and vis-a-vis gangs or maras on the other hand, which are the result of a set of discourse in the public sphere that are not dating back to yesterday. This is something that has been under construction for many years in many regions. So how intentional can these dysfunctions be in the design of the state? And why is the state doing what it's doing to get us to where we are now? The truth is more of the ability of the institutions of the state to solve historical issues in human development, such as formal employment, eradication of poverty, racism, discrimination, extreme concentration of economic power, together with new and legitimate aspirations of new generations facing new phenomena of very rapid technological evolution and the this inequality of people and communities. We have seen an infection throughout sectors of the public institutionality where there are control structures by organized transnational crime, which are protecting their trafficking routes. And I am not going into go into regular migration because this is something that calls our attention every single day. But new technologies, communication technologies, and spectacular advances in internet and artificial intelligence represent not only opportunities, but risks as well for democracy and development. And I will close with this because these capacities are transforming relations among institutions and the people. They are positive dynamics also because they make it possible to have new participation prioritization mechanisms and more efficient public management and accountability. There's no real term for accountability in Spanish that's as accurate as English. But there is also entails danger in for electoral processes, for democratic deliberations, by the use of disinformation as well as the concentration of power in stakeholders that are outside of the citizens' purview. So it is vital to improve social capacities and abilities to increase their knowledge, to be able to have more control of these mechanisms so that they can exercise their citizenship. And in this way, try to prevent these new digital technologies and artificial intelligence to become or continue being instruments that can be used for dissemination of, so to speak, truths that are outright lies that are used even within the organizations of the state. It is vital to improve these social capacities to increase or improve knowledge and to control these mechanisms so that people can exercise their citizenship. Thank you very much.
Permanent Secretariat of the Community of Democracies and the General Secretariat of the Organization of American States. In that agreement, we affirmed our shared and common objectives on the promotion and consolidation of democracy in this hemisphere. As I just mentioned, this cooperation between the Community of Democracies and the Organization of American States is not new. We have had for years a long-standing relationship of mutual collaboration and cooperation in the promotion and strengthening of democracy. And so last year, I had the opportunity to join a meeting of the Permanent Council of the OAS and learn of the voluntary group and its follow-on work to the Inter-American Democratic Charter. As we continuously review and renew our valuable partnership, I look forward to greater collaboration to strengthen democracies and ensure their resilience, including with the voluntary group. The Community of Democracies looks forward to the participation of the voluntary group and the OAS next year as we undertake the 25th anniversary of the founding of the community and the Warsaw Declaration. We have just found that in today's often challenging democratic ecosystem, strengthening dialogue and cooperation on democracy is necessary. I think we're all familiar with the challenges illustrated by such sources as VDEM's 2024 Democracy Report, which stated, quote, the level of democracy enjoyed by the average person worldwide in 2023 is down to levels last seen in 1985, end quote. But I think we also want to look at encouraging signs. As U.S. President Joe Biden noted in the first of the three summits for democracy, the world may be reaching an inflection point in which the tide is turning back towards a democratic culture. If so, this is not an accident, this is not just a phase in history, but it's because of the work done by groups such as this, the Friends of the Inter-American Democratic Charter, which always emphasized democracy is and should be the common form of government for all the countries of the Americas. Democracies must stand together and respond to the challenges by strengthening adherence to the principles and values contained in the Warsaw Declaration and in the Inter-American Democratic Charter. Promotion and preservation of democratic culture is well addressed by the principles and values contained in those two documents. And I think we find it especially important in the very serious times of challenge when we see an unconstitutional interruption of the democratic order. For the Community of Democracy, such an example occurred as we applied the principles of the Warsaw Declaration to a longtime member, a founding member of the community, the Republic of Mali, after the military coup removed the democratic government there. A period of dialogue was engaged, but eventually suspension of Mali from membership on the Governing Council was required. There are many other examples, but in the case of the Organization of American States, We see this important attention to protection of the democratic culture in the many interventions and actions taken to oppose last year's attempt to undermine constitutional governance in Guatemala. Democracies are better and do better when they work to promote and protect democracy in their borders and beyond. Supporting one another, holding frank and open discussions, and promoting dialogue among states, with the inclusion of civil society and young people on policy issues and trends that represent a threat to democracy, is, I think, the key to ensure sustained efforts for democratic resilience in this region and beyond. Today's organizer posed a guiding question to us, and that was, what aspects of democratic culture should be prioritized? And I would just say that democracy requires institutions, as we've seen in those examples I've just given, but it also requires an engaged and informed citizenry, one that understands democracy. And so therefore, education plays a vital role in shaping new democratic citizens, previously marginalized democratic citizens. Therefore, the promotion of democratic culture should be prioritized with the younger generation. Efforts to promote democracy and human rights among the young is going to bolster democratic resilience and strengthen our shared democratic principles. In a world that's facing and experiencing trust deficit, supporting advocates for democracy, human rights, and fundamental freedoms is essential for fostering global peace and prosperity. We think that given that more than half of the world's population is under the age of 30, and considering their significant contributions as civic leaders, investing in young individuals is crucial for driving positive change and fostering a democratic culture for the future. The community of democracies has recognized in the last few years that we cannot achieve this mission without the full involvement of young people. Last year at the Second Summit for Democracy, which took place in Costa Rica, we joined with the government of Costa Rica to focus largely on young people. And it was there that the UN ambassador, the US ambassador to the United Nations announced a new global youth democracy network, which the community of democracies will be implementing along with partners around the world. We believe that young individuals with their innovative ideas and fresh perspectives are going to reshape the democratic dialogue and reinvigorate democratic institutions. We have another program at the Community of Democracies, the Youth Leads, which include currently in this current cohort young people from El Salvador, Canada, and Guatemala. We believe that young people are going to strengthen the democratic culture. So as we engaged in new democracy strengthening initiatives, prioritizing youth engagement, we look forward to our continued collaboration with the Organization of American States and with the voluntary group for the follow-up of the Inter-American Democratic Charter. We look forward to learning of today's deliberations that will be taking place both here and afterwards, because we believe we're going to learn of new opportunities and new means to address challenges to democratic governance in the region and support the effective implementation of the Inter-American Democratic Charter. Thank you for having me today.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon. I would like to begin by thanking the Carter Center, of course, the U.S. Institute for Peace, as well as the OAS for inviting me. I have been asked to speak for 10 minutes on the last title of the Inter-American Democratic Charter regarding culture. That's what everyone neglects to talk about. It's always at the end of the list. And obviously, this is not the fault of anyone who organized this event, but rather those who wrote the charter. But those who wrote it knew it was fundamental. That's why they included it in this program. So I ask myself, what would happen today, 23 years after the signing of the Inter-American Democratic Charter? if we sat the states together trying to approve a document such as the one that was approved in 2000. Why? In 2001, it was approved not by a majority. It was approved by a unanimous and by a vote and by consensus, excluding Cuba. And we have also heard about the other two states who wouldn't support it today, Venezuela and Nicaragua. And I ask myself, are there any others who do not believe in the division of powers, in human rights, in the freedom of expression? Carlos was saying this before. The independence of the judiciary. What would happen 23 years later today if we were to present this to the OIS? Probably what happened 23 years would not happen again because there's a, not because there's a problem with the charter. It's not that governments are not doing the right thing in democratic terms. It is because the people are not demanding that they do the right thing. Why? Because democracy has not met some of those collective dreams that were set forth in it. Because the elites have not done their work, their job. They have been frivolous, corrupt, or cold. And also because there are no serious processes to promote democratic culture. So that instead of rewarding authoritarian experiments, they should demand of those elites to strengthen democracy. That's what's happening. What we see in the America's barometer is that currently 40% or plus of the populations in general do not believe in elections. They don't believe in political parties. They do not trust institutions. One of every five are willing to allow the president to shut down Congress to solve security problems. And this comes to light all the time. Why are people not calculating what's going on? Because there are no sustained processes based on the charter. But in spite of having these articles of the charter, this should be number one in anyone's political agenda. What can a democratic government do, which really wants to counteract a culture that seems to be rewarding authoritarian efforts? It could be due to several reasons. First, because they're not doing their duty. It could be due to several things that are focused on transforming values, beliefs, and practices that make up the citizen culture. There are many experiments that we mentioned just a few moments ago. There was an experiment in Bogota, a mayor in a chaotic city. The only plan we had in Bogota was to leave it. But then we had a mayor who proposed democratic practices, democratic values, and people started believing. And they started following the rule of law, and they started demanding that the authorities follow the rule of law, and people started paying taxes. That does not happen in our countries. So in Bogota, people started paying more taxes so there would be more redistribution, more equality, because they trusted their authorities, because the citizens were taught, and this were created by societies committed to citizen values and democratic values. And I will close with three things that occurred at the time in that specific good practice. We must remember this. First, we need to change our political communication habits. We cannot be reward those who is the loudest, who jumps higher, who's a clown. That is not a good result leading to complex democratic societies. And we also need to change our own communication, political communication habits. And I go back to Hoover's proposal of democratic communication. We have to be willing to listen to the other, and we have to be willing to defy our own political beliefs and provide reasons therefore. And we also need to change political practices so that political elites, which have a huge responsibility in the process, to follow the values of the Charter, not only ensure the rights and so on, but the values, accountability, so that people can trust institutions once again. Respect for division of power, respect for freedom of expression, and respect for legal institutionality. That's all I ask for. This will lead to significant participation. The participation of the people is worthwhile. It will renew hope in democracy and democratic processes, which are participatory processes. And in closing, we need to teach citizens in digital citizenship. And also, AI, and to prevent dark campaigns through malicious actors using non-human sources that will lead to coming from new technologies through social media. We therefore need to teach our people to be technologically, digitally savvy, to counteract those disinformation campaigns that damage democratic culture and therefore democracy. These are, I just gave you a good experience, good lesson learned at Bogota. And what we need to see is that we need to be willing and able to do this. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank our speakers for your very rich presentations. I think we couldn't have covered more of a panorama of democracy and its threats in such a short period of time. So really appreciate each of you. And I appreciate, want to pass on all of our thanks for the work that you do to strengthen democracy in the hemisphere and across the world. You really are the lighthouses of the democratic movements that need these interventions and these ideas to be circulated and populated so that we can key ourselves to the threats to democracy as they come up. Jenny, please pass on to President Carter, who remains democracy's champion, our very best. Thank you also for your hemisphere trotting. I think might as well just rent your house out. You seem to be on the move daily in some new place where democracy needs some attention. So I'd like to now turn the podium over to, for closing remarks, to another of democracy's champions in the hemisphere, Secretary General Luis Almagro. Never afraid to take a stand on behalf of the citizens who are seeking the democratic path, and we appreciate also the work that you do on democracy's behalf. Secretary General.
Thank you, Keith. It is impossible not to feel small next to you. So I would like, first of all, to say hello to Ginny and send my best regards from the OAS to President Carter, who's been a leader and champion of continental democracy and truly who worked in a practical and real sense on this and promoted a democratic culture that still exists in the Americas and that is a paradigm for all of us to attain and follow. I'd like to say hello to Eduardo, friends, colleagues, my other Secretary General colleague. Every time that I am invited to speak about the Charter, I read it once again. And truly, it is enriching to do so. That reading is worth quite a bit, and this instrument is also worthy. At this point in time at the organization, we have implemented different actions, the Article 16 and 17 of the Charter. 11 or 12 times we have had to implement this in different countries. We have applied Article 20. We have asked concrete actions. Of course, there have been many votings at the Permanent Council and the General Assembly. We have had these democratic, complex meetings. The last one, Eduardo referred to it, in what the man, but Suriname was very complex. Guyana was as well. And the transition in Peru was also difficult or complex. The action of the organization was always based on this basic fundamental instrument, the Charter, the Democratic Charter. Of course, it creates obligations and things we have to do that are very important. If we do not follow these obligations, we're not going to get anywhere. We have instruments, we have tools that we must use and that we must act when they say we should. The Charter is a formidable instrument that obviously needs no ulterior discussion, and it doesn't merit that we begin a discussion on or about the Charter. But yes, I do believe that we should speak of other elements that have shown up lately, other factors that are not mentioned in the Charter. There are new things, such as organized crime, as Eduardo mentioned. It's one of the most direct challenges and attacks on democracy, probably the biggest threat. Then human rights, apart from the three dictatorships, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, that exist at the moment, these are being, all these attacks, apart from that, and the greatest massacres, the assassination of journalists, are being done by organized crimes. Kidnappings, extortion, all of this which affects human rights. The Inter-American system today has been designed so that the states can violate human rights, not collected, but they're not designed to defend it from being attacked, the human rights being attacked by organized crime. So we have to renew or rethink how to defend these human rights. There are more journalists being assassinated than ever. We are still being negatively influenced by money because of organized crime. When we speak of democracy and we promote democracy, it is because we want the best for that country. It is okay that what is urgent today, and sometimes we sometimes put aside what is important, but each country that loses democracy or is left without democracy, and some have been left without democracy, and these are failed states that have created the worst humanitarian crisis in the region, or migratory crises, and that have affected the systematic attack of human rights in the region and les humanité. And all these crimes are proper of dictatorships and affected by organized crime. But apart from this, as I said, organized crime is violating human rights. And the instruments and tools we have are these. Because democracy essentially implies that you have to strengthen citizenry and institutions. to you have to better the institution. If you improve the institutions, you improve conditions. And if we look at this hemisphere, the better democracy works, the more development there is, the better equality and equity, and better the safety and security conditions. The better democracy works, the better that we can make everything else work. So we have this fundamental basic tool, which is the Charter. It is a constitution for the Americas. It is a constitution that should be fundamental, so much so that in that positive action that I have referred to of these 11 or 12 times that we have had to apply Article 17 and 18 and the time that we did apply Article 20. But those who stop being democratic stop feeling they belong to the Organization of American States. And even today, the OAS should be proud of being a community of democracies. We are a community of democracies. And anybody that is not democratic auto-excludes itself. And the same would be with the Congress of Angostura. Bolivar would say this. We are a community of democracies. And he or it that does, as a government, does not understand it or want it to be, then will be left on the side. But to develop the social justice, equality, you don't go on the side street. You go on the main street. And the main street is that of democracy, that of the Charter. So I greatly value the presentations made today on different issues and sides of democracy. We're still missing something, though, that other democracies have attained. That is democratization. We are still a region that is not equal, and it's still stratified. We have had problems of discrimination. We have had these promises of inequality and poverty for 200 years. I'm not even counting the period of the colony, because we have taken on the responsibility since we became independent so that that no longer exists. But without democratization, without social justice, without equality, without equity, it is very difficult to make democracy progress. This has always been an issue that will create lack of trust. And once we lose democracy, once we do, obviously, you feel it because you are feeling worse in a dictatorship. You're always worse off in a dictatorship. But we have some pending debts. The third wave of democracy has pending debt with our societies that we still owe them. These problems in the last 200 years have not been solved. We are still unequal, discriminatory. We even have problems to create basic conditions as gender equality, gender equity, things that are basic that shouldn't even need discussion nowadays. When we speak of climate change, we're facing true, real life challenges. So we need to solve these, to provide solutions for this. But the way to do it, and looking at failed states that left democracy, the ones that have two tires on the side road and the other two on the precipice towards dictatorship, that type of road is not admissible. It is not fair, just, and it does not provide the solutions we seek. So we have to have better efficiency, better, stronger institutions. Yes, that is fundamental within the parameters of democracy.
Thank you for listening to this event. If you'd like to listen to more events or explore our other podcasts, visit usip.org/podcasts.